Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, COP30, here in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. It's believed today will be the last day of the COP. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
The Amazon rainforest, often described as the lungs of the planet, is teeming with life. Thousands of Amazonian land defenders, both indigenous people and their allies, have traveled to the tropical city of Belém, Brazil, the gateway to the Amazon, carrying their message that the rainforest is at a tipping point but can still be saved. Hundreds of activists arrived on several caravans and river-borne flotillas in advance of a major civil society march. On Friday night, an indigenous-led march arrived at the perimeter of the COP's Blue Zone, a secure area accessible only to those bearing official summit credentials. The group stormed security, kicking down a door. United Nations police contained the protests, but it was a marker of the level of frustration at the failure of the deliberations to deliver just and effective climate action.
One of the leaders of the protests was Alessandra Corap Mundaruco. An iconic photograph of her at the forefront of Friday's action shows her standing defiant as police and riot gear line up outside the venue. It's become a symbol of indigenous resistance. In 2023, Alessandra was awarded the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize for her leadership in organizing, forcing British mining giant Anglo-American to withdraw from indigenous lands, including those of her people. I sat down with Alessandra Corap Mundaruco earlier this week and began by asking her to introduce herself and to describe the protest she led last Friday.
Meu nome é Alessandra Corap Mundaruco. Sou uma liderança do Rio Tapajós.
My name is Alessandra Corap Mundaruco. I am a leader from the Tapajós River, which is here in the state of Pará. And to come here, my delegation of the Mundaruco people, we took 2 days by bus plus 3 days by boat. It was a long trip. We came with women, we came with children, we came with our shaman, so I'm not here alone. In Pará, there are over 17,000 Mundaruco.
É, chegando aqui, a gente estava abandonado. A gente não tinha muitas vezes alimentação.
So when we arrived here at COP30, we were abandoned. We didn't have access to water. We had a hard time finding meals. It was very difficult for our people who had traveled for so long to get here. And the people wanted to be heard. We came in a large delegation, and we wanted to speak and we wanted to be heard, but we were blocked. I have credentials to enter COP, but many of the Mundaruco who are here do not. And so we decided that we needed to stop this COP. We needed people to stop and to listen to us. They needed to listen to us because we are the ones that are saying what the forest is demanding. We are the ones that are saying what the river is asking for. We are going through a lot of violence in our territories. The rivers, the Tapajós River, the Madeira River, they're being privatized for the creation of hydroways, for the transportation of soy, for agribusiness. This will expand the production of soy in Brazil. It will lead to more deforestation. It will lead to more indigenous rights violations. So we blocked entry to COP because we need to be heard.
No ano passado, teve muita seca. Nós moramos na Amazônia. Você sente?
So we live in the Amazon forest. We know what the river is going through. We need the river. We live with the river. Today the river, the Tapajós River, is dry. There are days in which the river disappears. There are so many forest fires. So why is it that we cannot have the power to decide here at COP? Why is it that they only speak about us, but that we cannot decide? And now President Lula has said that he's going to consult the people about federal decree number 12,600, which privatizes the rivers in the Amazon. But who is he going to consult? Is he going to consult the indigenous groups? Is he going to consult the jaguars, the fish, the animals? How is this consultation going to be? Who needs to be heard?
E ainda quer construir uma ferrovia.
So, and there's another project that Lula and the government are trying to implement in the Tapajós region, in the Munduruku territory, which is called the Ferrogrão, the soil railway. The soil railway, it serves to cheapen the export of soy commodities from Brazil to the global market. It will lead to the expansion of soy production. Soy does not grow under trees. Soy leads to deforestation. Soy leads to the contamination of rivers by agrotoxics, the invasion of indigenous territories. We need to demarcate indigenous lands in Brazil because large-scale commodity production is killing indigenous peoples. Yesterday, we had a Guarani Kaiowá indigenous person who was killed in the state of Mato Grosso do Sul with a bullet to his head. So large-scale monoculture does not only kill with the pen, by decision-making, by evicting indigenous groups from their territory, but it also kills with the gun. So we're here to urgently ask the international community to support the demarcation of indigenous lands and to support that President Lula revoke Presidential Decree 12600, which privatizes rivers in Brazil.
So you led a flotilla down the river and you shut down the UN climate summit. There's this iconic image of the UN climate summit, the COP30 president. He is the climate ambassador for Brazil, Andrea Correa de Lago, holding a Munduruku child. Can you explain what that is? You forced him to come out to negotiate with you.
Olha, a gente estava ali naquele momento quando decidimos de fechar.
So we were there blocking the entry to the COP, and we arrived very early. We arrived at 5 a.m. Everyone was hungry. We hadn't eaten breakfast. The children started crying, and the children are the strongest ones. And they were already hungry, and the sun was coming out. And we wanted to speak to an authority, either the president of Brazil or the president of COP. And at some point, the president of COP said that we had to open up entry to COP. And we said, we are not leaving. You have to come out here and talk to us. And so he came out, and we got the meeting with Minister Sonia Guajajara, Minister Maria Silva, because we knew that we had to be listened to. And that child, that baby that André Correa holds in his arms, that is a very important symbol. Because in holding that baby, that child represents the future of the Munduruku people. And André, if he carries out these projects, if the government of Brazil decides to implement these projects without consulting, without listening to the Munduruku nation, he is destroying the future of that child that he held in his own arms. So he's assuming the responsibility for that life and for the life of all Munduruku children and babies.
Your protests have made enormous difference. Brazil has now created 10 new indigenous territories as you were protesting this week. Territories for indigenous people, which mean your culture and environment are protected under Brazilian law. That happened this past week. What exactly does that mean?
Há muito tempo antes.
So, to start, you know, we were here much before, thousands of years before colonization began, so all of this territory is ours. But today, to demarcate an indigenous land, it's very difficult. It's a very long bureaucratic and political process where we have to prove many things. So we have to prove that that land is ours, even though it has always been ours. And if government does not demarcate the land, it means that we will be expelled, evicted from our territories, and we will be killed. Demarcation is something that needs to happen because non-demarcation means our deaths. There are so many companies that have an eye on our land. So hydropower plants, mining, soy producers, land grabbers, illegal loggers, legal loggers. There's so many people that want our territory. And there's so much land that still has to be demarcated. So let's talk about the Munduruku lands in the Mid-Tapajós region. My land, Sauré Bapin, was declared yesterday. Declaration is the third step in the long process of demarcation of an indigenous land. So this is one more step in ensuring the full rights to our territory. But there's another territory called Sauré Maibu, which has already been declared, but now the illegal occupants need to be removed from this land. That's the next step, the physical demarcation. There are so many invaders in these lands, soy producers, farmers. It's so easy for non-indigenous people to have access to land in Brazil. All they need to do is go there, deforest, take down the forest, and they say that the land is theirs. That's how land grabbing works. It's so easy for them, but it's so difficult for us. And now there's this marco temporal, the temporal cutoff limit that says that we only have rights to lands where we were physically present in 1988. But we were always on these lands. It doesn't make any sense. So what I want to say is that we're very happy that our lands advanced in the demarcation process, but there are so many lands that still need to be recognized and demarcated in Brazil.
In 2023, you won the Goldman Environmental Prize for fighting the British mining company Anglo American. Can you explain what they were trying to do and what you won?
Olha, 2019.
So in 2019, after President Bolsonaro was elected, we started living a reign of terror in our territories. So there was a lot of invasion by illegal gold diggers, né? Illegal wildcat miners, garimpeiros. They came into the territory, they brought with them illegal criminal groups, they brought with them prostitution, violence, contamination of rivers, contamination of fish. It was a real order of terror. And at that same time, between 2021 and 2022, we found out that the British mining company, Anglo American, had filed a request to prospect minerals within our land. Anglo American declared that our territory was not an indigenous land because it was not yet formally demarcated. But everyone knew that we live there. Everyone knows that it's our territory. For us, it's our territory. And so we were forced to fight at the same time against the garimpo, the illegal gold mining, and the big mining corporation, Anglo American. So we decided to speak out. We wrote a letter explaining everything that was happening, explaining that what we demanded, that we demanded that Anglo American leave our territory immediately. Amazon Watch, which is a partner, sent this letter to the corporation. And they were obliged to step back, and they were obliged to remove their mining interest, to give up their mining interest within our territory because of our struggle. So for us, that is an indigenous land. That is a sacred land. It's where our fish are, our fruits. It's where we have authorization from the forest to step in. And so we will continue fighting. We have so many victories that the world needs to learn more about. We kept a hydropower plant from being implemented in our territory, and we will continue fighting.
Alessandra, I want to ask what keeps you going. I mean, indigenous land protectors, environmentalists, especially the indigenous, face such violence. Talk about that threat that so many face and why you keep going.
So what keeps me going are my people. My people keep me going, and my people keep me alive. The children, the territory, my family, it's a collective struggle, and this is what keeps me alive. I've already suffered 2 attacks. Twice people have entered my house, have invaded my house to try to keep me from fighting, threatening me, but I will not give up. I want the entire world to know who the Munduruku people are, who the indigenous peoples of Brazil are, and what we represent. I know who I'm facing in my struggle. I know who I'm up against. I'm not up against just anyone. It's against big corporations, against government, against these people that we commonly say that have power. But we have power. My people have power because we have a people. We have culture. We have the forest. We have the things that really matter. So we know that we are powerful and not them. I am not afraid, and I will not be silenced, and I will keep fighting.
I'm wondering if you could compare your struggles against the current government, the Lula government, to the Bolsonaro government.
É muito diferente. É o ex-presidente Bolsonaro.
So it's they were very different struggles in these two political contexts. So former President Bolsonaro, he would foster violence against indigenous peoples openly. There were no human rights. There was no protection. He was incentivizing the invasion of all territories. He was against the poor. He was against the black population. He was against the indigenous groups. He was against Brazilian society. He was only in favor of corporations. And his speech was that indigenous peoples should become white people, that they should simply integrate Brazilian society and no longer be indigenous. He would say this openly. And the Munduruku people very openly confronted Bolsonaro. We openly confronted the Garimpo. There was a lot of violence against the Munduruku women. Maria Leusa, a Munduruku leader from the High Tapajós region, she was attacked. Her house was burned. There was a lot of direct confrontation. Under Lula, things are very different. Lula speaks openly about the protection of the Amazon. He speaks about demarcation. He sits down with us. There is dialogue. He is demarcating indigenous lands, but he still has a lot to learn. If he had learned what he should have learned by now, he would not have passed this decree which privatizes the rivers and turns them over to companies and concessions. He would be demarcating a lot more lands. So it's a lot better now, but there's still so much to be done.
And finally, if you can look right into that camera and share your message to the world.
Que eu digo para vocês que estão aí. Vocês estão fazendo o que com o meio ambiente?
So my message as Alessandra Corapi Munduruku to you who's watching this now is, what are you doing to the environment? What is your country doing to the environment? What is your corporation? What are your companies? What are your representatives doing to the environment and to indigenous rights? Do you know what they are doing? Are they respecting the rights of indigenous peoples and of the environment? Are you monitoring where investments are going? Are you monitoring how corporate activities are taking place on the ground? You need to know. Because we here, we do not eat soy, we do not eat gold, we do not eat iron ore. We eat the fish and we eat the fruits from the forest, and we need our forest standing. So I ask you, please, monitor your corporation, monitor your company, monitor your governments, watch your representatives, be aware of what they're doing. We need you to do this for us here in the forest. This is my message to you from Alessandra Corapi Munduruku.
That's Alessandra Corap Munduruku, one of the indigenous resistance leaders who shut down the COP last Friday for a few hours demanding climate action.
Coming up, we'll speak with climate justice activist Harjeet Singh, advisor to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. He's based in India, one of the countries that rejected moving away from fossil fuels. Stay with us.
Mata volviéndolo un criminal por petróleo el hombre mata.
Teteras in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting at the UN Climate Summit, that's COP30, here in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Today is the last scheduled day of COP30. As we go to air, the final text agreement has not yet been reached. Decisions are made by consensus at COPs, requiring agreement among 192 countries. The biggest fight is over the exclusion of a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. Reportedly, Saudi Arabia, China, Russia, and India are among those that rejected the roadmap. But more than 80 countries have joined a call to demand a roadmap be included.
To discuss all of this and more, we're joined by Harjeet Singh, strategic advisor to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, founding director of Satat Sampada Climate Foundation, a social justice group. He's also the global convener of the Fill the Loss and Damage Fund campaign, usually in New Delhi, India, joining us here from Belém. In fact, yesterday, while people might not have realized, you were also a guest on the show because you were right behind us with many other people protesting about loss and damage. If you can start off in these last hours of the COP, and it's our last broadcast directly from here in Brazil, what's happened so far?
Well, we came to this COP to get a very concrete decision on just transitioning away from fossil fuels, to get a mechanism so that we can do it in a much more cooperative manner. We also wanted a very strong decision in the form of a roadmap to move away from fossil fuels. And I want to remind everybody that 2 years ago in Dubai at COP28, we got a decision for the first time after three decades that the world has to transition away from fossil fuels. Not that strong, didn't mention phase out of fossil fuels, but strong enough. But for the last 2 years, nothing has happened. So this COP, we wanted a very strong language and a clear roadmap to move away from fossil fuels. And, of course, finance remains a massive issue. If we do not provide finance, the implementation will not happen.
What do you mean by finance? Why should richer countries give money to poorer countries?
When we talk about the climate crisis or the world that we are living in, which is 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer, and all the disasters and climate impacts that we see because of that, it's developed countries who are responsible for putting disproportionate amount of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. That's the primary cause, and I'm talking about fossil fuels, coal, oil, and gas, and that's why it is such an important issue. So the cumulative accumulation that we have seen of these greenhouse gases from fossil fuels are primarily from developed countries. So they are the ones responsible for the crisis. Of course, now most emissions come from developing countries who need finance and technology so that they don't have the same fossil fuel-based development that the Western countries had over the last 200 years.
And Harjeet, if you could talk about the fact you're from India. At the moment, 9 out of 10 of the most polluted cities in the world are in South Asia, between India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. So if you could talk about the, literally lethal effects of this in India, for example, now lung disease is the second leading cause of death, whereas just decades ago, it was the eighth, number one. Number two, the fact that previously, that most polluted cities in the world were not in South Asia, but in China. So how did this happen in South Asia, and what did China do to alter its position?
There's no doubt that the epicenter of pollution has shifted from East Asia to South Asia. China declared a war on pollution, and I would say it has largely won because of its top-down enforcement. And when we look at South Asia, we are dealing with the same so-called developmental problems. Very weak waste management, unregulated construction. We find a huge dependence on fossil fuels, coal, oil, and gas. And because of lack of governance and resources, we are stuck with that model. And I must also mention that 83 out of 100 most polluted cities in the world happen to be in India. So we are dealing with a massive problem. It's not just a Delhi problem or a Dhaka problem. All other so-called second-tier cities have similar issues. So we must declare a war on pollution like China did. And For that, what we require is, of course, dealing with the waste management issues, moving away from fossil fuels, massive investment in public transport. And that has to be a revolution now, which we have not seen in India and in South Asia yet. We also need to promote electric mobility. Yes, we are making some strides, but a lot more is required to make that happen. And we are really lagging behind on waste management issues. So what we need is a revolution that comes from the citizens, who need to also recognize that they have a role to play. But more importantly, holding the politicians to account. The fact is, in India, it's air pollution is still not an election issue. It's still very caste-based and based on jobs and economy. Air pollution must become the most important election issue. Until that happens, we will not be able to make that shift.
And Harjeet, if you could talk about, this is COP30. There have been 30 climate summits. Many people say now there's no agreement reached. People are dissatisfied with whatever agreement will be reached. But what is the utility of these summits, especially for the countries most vulnerable to climate change?
I mean, this is the only place where we can get justice. However ineffective it has been, however slow it has been, can we really rely on G7s and G20s, those large group of economies who are only focused on GDP and trade, but not really protecting environment and people? That's why you need a space where we, as 200 nations who are almost equal. Bangladesh can challenge the European Union, and Malawi can challenge the US. So, but the only difficulty, or the main difficulty that we face here, is everything happens on consensus. We have allowed polluters to take over this process and make it ineffective. I'm sure you have talked a lot about 1,600 fossil fuel lobbyists who are moving around, who have made this space ineffective. That's what we have to challenge. We cannot discard the space.
But do you think the fossil fuel lobbyists should be banned?
Absolutely. Like we did in our fight against tobacco. WHO did not allow the tobacco industry to have a seat at the table. Why are we allowing the fossil fuel lobbyists to negotiate? It's like inviting arsonists to tell us how to put out the fire.
Well, speaking of fires, yes, this place is just recovering from a fire yesterday where everyone was evacuated. We'll be broadcasting from New York on Monday, leaving Belém, Brazil, where we are today. Harjeet Singh, want to thank you for being with us. Strategic advisor to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. That does it for our show. Special thanks to our local AP crew here at COP30 in Belém.
Hi, my name is Luke, and I'm the technical director.
Carlos Vargas, AP producer.
Hello, I'm Jules, and I'm cameraman on this fantastic show.
I'm Diego, AP camera.
Hey, my name is Pablo, and I'm doing sound and technical support.
And special thanks also to Taser Mrs. Oliveira Fernandes. And to our Democracy Now! Belém team, Trina Nadura, Nermeen Sheikh Maria, Inez Terracena, Sam Alkoff, and Dennis Moynihan. And to our New York team, Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tay Marie Astrujo, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Safwat Nazal, our Executive Director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Special thanks to Nermeen Sheikh.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CJSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CJSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cjsf.ca.
Starting from the week of Monday, May 30th, the Student Union Building is open 7 days a week, from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The sub-building common spaces, along with the bookable spaces, are available for use. Any comments or questions, please go to the Simon Fraser Student Society website at sfss.ca for more information.